Welcome to The Lobbying Show, the show about the people in government relations, how they got into it, and what their jobs entail, what works and what doesn't. I am the host, Jim O'Brien. Our last show was with Stephanie Wright from Stateside Associates. Today, we continue our visit with Stateside with an interview with Bob Maurice. Bob also works on state and local issues. And note to lobbyists, Bob is also the point person for lobbyist referrals. Bob began his career working in the Massachusetts State House. One of his earlier jobs was perfect preparation for doing political work. He was an EMT. So let's find out more from Bob. Bob, why do you have Nebraska up there?
Nebraska is kind of, so I covered that when I was a when I was an associate. So when I was an associate, I covered over about half the country in terms of legislative monitoring. And so Nebraska is kind of a unique one because they're unicameral.
That's what you're
saying. And they're nonpartisan.
Nonpartisan also.
They're also nonpartisan. Yeah, they don't have a partisan designation. I mean, their candidates, when they run for office, they obviously they have a party, but they don't stand as a Republican or a Democrat. It's the first two past the post for the primary, and then it's whoever wins that one becomes the senator. They call them senators. So there's 49, and the speaker is elected by a secret ballot, and then they appoint committee chairs based upon that. So, yeah, it's a unique dynamic, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that was what, so you covered that when you were an associate?
When I was an associate, yeah. And then we do some client work out there with some contract lobbyists every now and then. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that's why I have Nebraska up there. Yeah.
Because it's so unique.
It's just unique, yeah. And I was just like, it's kind of a cool state.
It is very, very unique.
Yeah.
So have you, because they don't stand as Republican or Democrat, what's the main difference that you've noticed? I mean, obviously, because you probably still know who's generally a Republican or a Democrat, I would assume.
Sure.
I mean, is there...
It's almost like a... I don't want to say utopian legislative process, but it's kind of a unique one.
Yeah.
So once the bill comes out of committee, it goes to what's called general file, which is it's on the floor, it's open for amendments, and it has to pass through three votes on the floor before it goes to the governor.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And but do they still coalesce around essentially what would be Democrats and Republicans?
Yeah. There are definitely two factions. You can definitely tell who's lined up where.
Okay.
And there's actually term limits out there. So senators serve four-year terms, and they're limited to two consecutive terms. And they there was a huge number of freshmen this past past election.
Okay.
And so they ended up with a lot of, like I said, the freshman members, and some of them were serving as committee chairs. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That must be, that's quite a learning curve.
Yeah, absolutely. To say the very least, yeah.
So getting back to Stateside, so Connie retired, two new CEOs, co-chairs, whatever.
Yeah, co-CEOs, yeah.
And it's interesting that you all do so many different things. You do monitoring, you do some lobbying on various issues, right?
Well, we'll manage the lobbyists.
Manage lobbyists.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't do actually any direct lobbying?
No, we will, to be on the safe side, if some of the client work that we're doing falls under the definition of lobbying, then we'll go and register. We have someone who does does our ethics and compliance work.
Got it.
And we'll check all that kind of stuff out to make sure that what we're doing is in compliance. And if it requires us to register, then we'll do that.
And so you, your team that must follow all these rules in 50 states, I mean, I can't imagine what that entails. I mean, we have to follow
One state, yeah, yeah.
So they have to make sure that you're abiding by the different ethics laws in every different jurisdiction, and cities for that matter.
Sure. So our legislative team, we're covering every single state between policy and process. So that's a lift in and of itself. But in terms of compliance, yeah, we have one of our ethics people looking at the statutes and making calls and making sure that we're on the up and up. So it's a lift, but we get it done. So.
And so what would you say the top three services are that you provide to your clients?
Sure. I would say so. It's the legislative monitoring, which kind of grew out. It was an internal tool when we first started, and it grew into probably our most popular service right now. It was a way that we were tracking the bills and regulations that were going on across the country to help the work that we were doing internally. And so eventually it just became a service that we offer to clients. And so that's our most popular one. In addition to our regulatory team, we've got a team of attorneys and staff that are either looking at registers and doing forecasting, doing compliance work, or doing some sort of special projects. That's our other division that sits over on that side of the office over there.
Who heads that division?
His name is John Howell.
Yes.
Yep.
We met John last time.
Yep. Okay, great. Yeah. Yep. And then our issue management team, where we're doing some hands-on client work, which is the legislative and regulatory team, supplement a lot of that that work as well with monitoring or other type of regulatory analysis.
Okay.
And those are the three prongs of it. But I should add, there's probably a fourth, I would say, which is local, which
right.
Stephanie Reich heads up.
Yep.
We're covering close to 5,000 jurisdictions across the country, cities and towns, counties, airport authorities at the local level, and it's probably one of the fastest growing services that we offer.
Because less and less gets done in Washington, you're seeing more and more done in the states, and then even more and more done on the municipal level.
Exactly, yeah.
One example would be like the sugar tax. You've seen a lot of municipalities begin to take a look at that.
Sugar taxes, plastic bags, wage and hour, predictive scheduling, you know, even on the opioid issue. I mean, we're covering all of it. Yeah.
And the attorney generals just came out yesterday.
Yeah.
With their 34 attorney generals.
Yeah.
And you all, because you have a very active practice with following the attorney generals, correct?
We do. Yeah. Steve Arthur, who's out in Colorado. We call that Stateside West, I guess. he heads up our AG work. And does a great job with it.
So how did you get at Stateside?
Sure.
Why don't we even go back further? How did you get into politics? You grew up in Massachusetts?
I grew up in Massachusetts.
Where in Massachusetts?
I grew up in Marlborough, Massachusetts. So
okay.
26 miles west of Boston.
Okay.
Yeah. I started following it probably when I was a little kid. I was maybe in ninth grade or so. I was really interested in it. We had just had election of 2000, and I was fascinated by the whole thing, the recount, what was going on. Like, my first election that I can really, I remember 96 with Clinton.
Yep.
And 92 when Clinton won the first time. But 2000 was, all right, Clinton's gone. It's a brand new, who's going to be our next president? And come election day, we still didn't know. And so I remember as a ninth grader just kind of diving right into this stuff. And so I studied political science as a major at Westfield State for an undergrad. I was also a part-time EMT. I took the EMT course when I was in college. And I kind of thought I was going to go in that direction, firefighter or EMT route. But politics was always kind of there. It was kind of my... I don't know, just always a passion that I've had. And so I ended up getting out of college in 08, and it was lousy. I was working on a campaign, and it was a lousy job market. It was right at the recession that had just hit, the financial crisis, the housing crisis. And so I started working on an ambulance and then went to grad school. And then 2011, I got the chance to work up at the State House in Massachusetts. I worked for a member, was a legislative aide. So I ran the office. I did the constituent work, the research, the press releases. I ran the office, basically.
So the EMT training,
That
must have come in handy for politics. So how long were you actually doing working as an EMT?
Sure. I started off when I was in college. I was a campus EMT. We used to go to all the calls on campus, and then...
Those must have been interesting.
Oh, yeah.
What's your best story out of that one?
Oh, gosh. I prefer not to get into that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. You can leave the names out.
Sure. Yeah, it's still with HIPAA.
Do you have frats at Westfield State?
We did not. No,
okay,
we did not. Yeah. I think that...
So how long were you an EMT after school?
9 years.
Nine years.
I got my license in 2006 when I was 20.
Okay.
And I let it go finally. I'd been living down here and working at Stateside, and I just decided to let the certification go, because you have to take continuing education classes, and you have to do a refresher course, and a number of other things. And so I just been wrapped up in this kind of stuff, and didn't really have the time to keep going with it. So,
when you were at the Massachusetts State House, and you're running a office for a state representative, in Assemblyman. And how long did you do that?
2 years, from the inauguration to sine die adjournment. I was the rep's first and only staffer. So, so he had lost re-election in 2012.
Okay.
And so my job was contingent upon the rep staying in office.
Right.
And so tried to stay in the building, because I absolutely loved working there. It was a great place to work, great place to be. It's where I kind of fell in love with state politics rather than just politics in general, because it was just so fascinating to be there. you know, the work I was doing, I felt like I was making a difference, especially with some of the constituent work.
Yep. And policy decisions. You're doing constituent work, policy work.
Yeah.
Politics.
Yep. All of it. Yeah. All of it. Yeah. And 2013, I was scrolling through LinkedIn one day and I see Stateside Associates, and there was a position open for a legislative associate. I was like, what is this? And it's like, you must have worked in a state legislature. Check that box. Tracking and monitoring legislation, check that box, you know. And so I'm like, all right, well, let's apply and see where this goes. And I got a call from Jake Bookwalter, who was a manager at the time and is now the vice president of the legislative division.
Yep.
Interviewed me and brought me down to D.C. And hired me a couple weeks later, and that was the end of that. So I've been here for 4 years.
Stateside is really, so it's a great place for people, like a first job. Is so the entry-level job here as a legislative associate, is that the typical starting point?
Yeah, so it'd be a research assistant. So what the research assistant's doing, we've got four teams of associates, or actually our policy teams. The research assistants back up the associates in terms of managing the day-to-day work in terms of legislative monitoring. So whether it's checking for committee hearings or updating certain bills and just whatever type of work that needs to be done with the legislation that we're monitoring for clients, the legislative, the research assistants are doing that type of work. And then the associates is a grade above that.
Okay.
And that's where they're doing a bit more, you know, hands-on interaction.
So you typically come in as a research assistant.
Yeah. And then you move up to a legislative associate.
So you came in as an associate.
Yeah.
So what type of experience do you look for someone who wants a job as a research assistant?
Sure. One of the prerequisites is that you have had to work in the state legislature at some point. We've had someone from every single state legislature. I believe the only one we haven't had someone from was Alaska.
Okay.
We've had somebody from every single state. And we tend to look for people who just have a passion for state government, first and foremost. You have to love this kind of stuff in order to do it. Drafting legislation or preparing testimony, understanding the legislative process is key, because we our clients depend on us to be able to do that. And so if you know it in your state, you'll be able to figure it out in other states as well. And we are constantly making sure that we are up on the latest in terms of how the states work and how the legislative process works, what the dynamics are. I'll give you an example, like Nebraska.
Yeah.
We know that there's only one chamber in Nebraska, and you know, if a bill comes out of committee, it's on the floor, it's got to go through three votes on the floor before it actually goes to the governor for approval or veto. And it's the same thing in New York, where the Democrats control the assembly and the Republicans control the Senate. And so we know that you have to look for a companion bill in either chamber. Otherwise, you know, you kind of need to get an idea of where this bill is actually going to go.
Right.
You know, we know things about the amendment process. So some states have a gut amendment where you can strike all after the enacting clause, and you can put whatever you want in there. So you had a charter school bill, and now you got a bill that deals with, you know, menu labeling. It's like, how did that happen? But that's some states allow for that. In South Dakota, they call it the hog house. So yeah, it's so when you hear someone talking about that bill got hog-housed, it means that it was a strike all.
Yep.
And they're changing up completely.
And it doesn't have to be germane to the original bill?
Some states, no. California's like that. They call them a spot bill, or Illinois, it's a shell bill, where they can just take it and just do what they want with it. You know, California, a lot of cases, what they'll do is they'll file a bill stating the intent to do something, and then they'll get it in there before the committee deadline, and then that's where they'll come up with their policy. And then right before the deadline hits to get it out of policy committee, that's where you'll start to see
the real language.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so how many research assistants do you have approximately right now?
We've got four.
Okay.
Four. Yeah.
And they can eventually move up to legislative associate?
They can. Yeah, absolutely.
And then what's after that?
Typically, they would some other position in the company. So sometimes they could either go to the regulatory division to get a different skill set. They could go over to, they could take a position on the issue management team, working with some of the other managers as a manager, or they could be the head of the legislative division as a legislative manager.
Okay.
So those are typically some of the paths. Sometimes our associates will will gain a ton of experience here at stateside. They'll work for a few years as either a regulatory or a legislative associate, and they'll go and work in government affairs.
Go to maybe a client.
Or any company.
Yeah.
And we've got a pretty vast alumni network of people spanning over three decades of people who are in government affairs. And we've got a few stateside alums who are contract lobbyists in states.
Yep.
And they've all cut their teeth here at stateside, and they've learned how to work as a government affairs professional. They typically do very well after their time here.
Yeah, I have to believe it's just great training, because you're seeing all the different states, and even the states that you're not covering, you're seeing from your colleagues.
Sure.
You're seeing from the ground up how you're the assistants looking at the process and interacting with the legislative associates and everyone else on the team, and all the different clients that you have and the different issues. So it seems like a great training ground for people who want to get into government relations on a state level.
It is, because
you almost couldn't design it any better.
No, I don't think we could, especially if you're trying to get that type of experience, because you get the process experience of learning. All right, so if I'm going to be a legislative associate or a regulatory associate, I've learned the process of how the legislature works in a number of different states. I mean, I covered 25 states and Puerto Rico when I was an associate. So that's half the country.
Wow.
And our legislative associates, it's similar. So you can say I've covered these many states. I know how the process works, the political dynamics. But also, I've worked with clients in, whether it's retail or healthcare or manufacturing or energy, any type of client. They've got that skill set, so they understand not only how does the state, the regulators, the legislators and policymakers view the issue, but how does the client view the issue as well? To get that two-way perspective on an issue is really important. Just because the people who ultimately are affected by what legislatures do is the public, and that includes constituents and companies who are trying to make a dollar.
Right.
And so to get both sides is just going to be just so much more valuable.
Yeah, I have to believe it's just just a great training ground.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
It's also interesting that you all here at Stateside have kind of like the 10,000 foot level view, but you also have all the details and what's going on the ground.
Sure.
I mean, how often do you put out the newsletter or the update that we get? I mean,
this week in the States, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we put that out weekly. That comes out Monday morning. It's one of the first things that goes out. It's this
yep.
week in the States. So we
okay.
cover what is, from a 10,000 foot view, as you said, what is going on in the States. So whether it's some major bills that are coming up for hearings or on the regulatory side, what agencies are holding comment periods, or if there's a special deadline, or we cover all of that. And so we try to give everybody who reads This Week in the States, whether it's a contract lobbyist or one of our clients or anybody else who subscribes to it, just an idea of what's going on, so they can kind of either
have a general idea,
or if they want to dig a little deeper, we can either assist with
yep.
that, or there's plenty of stuff that's out there in terms of information.
And then do some clients just ask for, we're just interested in covering this issue wherever it comes up, or we're just interested in these three states, or is it different by client, or is it, how does that?
Yeah, we customize our monitoring. When you're talking about legislative monitoring, we customize it to what the client needs. So whether they want to do 50 states, legs and regs, local, or just a handful of issues in a certain number of states, we can tailor it to what the client is looking for.
Okay.
And then push the legislation that they're specifically interested in terms of monitoring. So what's unique about our monitoring service is that we don't, our associates, which I can attest to because I spent many hours doing this, is we read the bills. We do it by hand. We're checking the introductions as they come from the states and reading bills with clients in mind. So, all right, so here's a 4,000-page budget bill. We're understanding that some states don't have policy language in their budgets, but a lot of states do.
Yep.
And some states have budget implementers, where they, you'll pass your appropriations, but how are you going to actually implement that money that you're appropriating? And that's
yes.
where the policy comes in. So we're looking through that. I was like, all right, so we're under the energy sector. We're under healthcare, health and human services. All right? And each team that's focused on those policy areas is looking and checking for the clients that they care about. And with the other type of support that we have here, we're able to send the client the provisions that they care about and some political background about who the sponsor is, why did they introduce it, what are the other types of dynamics that are going on. And then there, that generates an email alert to the client every step of the way, from introduction to referral to committee to amendment to chamber passage, or all the way up to signing the adjournment or signature or veto of the governor. And we cover that whole thing. And we tailor the summary without legalese or anything that makes things overly complicated, directly to what the client is looking for. So you get your 4,000-page budget bill. We're not going to send you, you know, the whole bill. We'll say, all right, your provisions are on this page right here, and this is what you need to know, this is what you need to care about, and your provisions begin on page 600 or something like that. And we push all that directly to the client. And we have an online portal that we use to communicate with our clients called StateLink.
Okay.
And all of that, in addition to the email alerts, all of the legislation that they're tracking is able to be viewed online.
On there, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then if they see something that is problematic or they have concerns about, they'll express that to you, or they'll talk to their contract lobbyist, or you can reach out to contacts you may have in the state.
Sure. Yeah, we track down leads. So our legislative team is terrific at that, making calls, tracking down leads, figuring out what's going on. Clients will reach out to us and ask us for a bit more information, or in some cases they might, you know, engage a lobbyist, and all of our clients have access to that service at no charge.
Yeah.
To either to the client or to the consultant for the referral. So that's how we've run it for since we've been in existence, and we think it served us well, it served our clients well, it served the contract lobbyists that we work with in the states and in the municipalities as well, very well as well.
Yeah. So now, what have you seen any changes in the states in general, or in lobbying, or in the approaches in the past few years? You're seeing any recently that you're seeing trends that kind of new?
Sure. So I've been in this position for about 2 years now, and from the state perspective, states, people are paying a lot more attention to the states. And part of it is because of how the gridlock works here in Washington, but people are paying a lot more attention to the states. And so, you know, it used to be that your contract lobbyist was your contract lobbyist in, you know, whatever state you're working in. But now you're part of a whole network of people who are working on behalf of your issues. And so some of the lobbyists that I know that have come to D.C. will be like a convention with the entire government affairs team of that whole company.
Right.
And so it's a multifaceted effort. So that's one of the new aspects of it, that it's a lot more, even though it is state oriented, everything is kind of nationalized, because everybody's looking at, you know, a map of the states of the U.S. and going, all right, what's going on in these states here, and how can we either as a client raise our issue profile, or what's a threat, what's an opportunity, and so and how do our lobbyists kind of fit into that whole?
So companies are getting more engaged on a state level, and then bringing their contract lobbyists from around the country to one location, and kind of having and almost educating them as to what they're seeing in other states.
Sure.
So they're all on the same page, and maybe even interacting with grassroots people or PR people, or legal team, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and all that's kind of a multifaceted approach to a GR program. You know, in addition to just legislative and regulatory lobbying, but you know, how are you getting your message out there? You know, are you doing like a Hill Day or something like that? Are you doing PR campaign or grassroots grass tops? All of that kind of is bundled together. So,
yeah. Any other changes or things you're seeing that are interesting?
It's this year, I think, from the legislative standpoint, a lot of states had trouble with their budgets this year.
Yes.
A lot of special sessions going on in terms of trying to get the state's budgets in order. Illinois finally has theirs. That's been a unique dynamic, because you're waiting kind of, if you're in the government affairs business, you're waiting for, you know, legislative session to wrap up to see where everything is.
No, like, more harm can be done.
Right. Let's see where this let's do a postmortem. Right. Let's see where everything is. But it's like, all right, can they get their budget done? And what else do we have to wait on? And what else is going to happen here?
Yes.
And so that's one of the big changes. And so, you know, a lot of times clients will want to, you know, use the interim to think about the next session and all that kind of stuff. But if you've got states that are still meeting, it's like you can, like you never
a lot less time to plan for the next session.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah. But this is we've only got a handful of states meeting currently right now. So.
And the attorney generals have become that has become much more active.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And there's firms that you know specialize in just that work or just that area.
Sure, yeah. Whether it's a law firm or a lobbying shop, we from our standpoint, where it's just another stakeholder in the process. So it's someone else that that can affect the business or can affect you know either in a positive or negative way the business climate for our clients. And so understanding what they do and how they operate is very key.
Well, Bob, thank you. This has been great. So where do you live down here? Well, right now your office is in Alexandria.
Sure, yeah.
And where do you live?
I live in D.C. I live over near Georgetown.
Okay, so you do the reverse commute.
I do the reverse commute, yeah. I usually get a ride in the morning and then walk home in the evening. So.
Wow,
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
And you're also a runner?
I am a runner, yeah. I do. I try to get at least one half marathon in each year. And so this past year was a little rough with the rock and roll half marathon that I
had. Oh, you did it down here?
Yeah, down here. It was 20 degrees out, and they were put on health advisories. And I had two pairs of socks on, you know, a number of layers, and I made it. It was rough, but I made it. So.
What's your next marathon?
I don't know. I might try to do something this fall, but I think I'll probably do the rock and roll.
Is that, March?
It's in March, yeah. Okay. So we'll see. It's 50-50. It could be really warm or it could be really cold. So, but yeah, it's one of my hobbies. Yeah.
And the last question I was going to ask you about is conferences.
Sure.
You all are probably at just about every conference, I would imagine. Are there conferences that you particularly focus on?
Sure. Yeah. I go to ECOS,
okay.
Environmental Council of the States, which is the environmental commissioners at the state level. This past fall, we were at this past week we were out in Jackson, Wyoming, for
great spot.
Great spot. Yeah. Yeah, and that was a good conference, and so that's the one that I'm involved in. But depending on what the issue manager is involved with policy or just their expertise, that's where they tend to focus their effort on with the groups.
But NCSL, CSG,
yeah,
you guys do all those.
Okay. Yeah, we attend those absolutely. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
and participate. So.
Well, this has been great.
Yeah,
Bob, thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
We appreciate
thanks for coming
it.
In. Yeah.
All right. Thanks.